And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike Gregg. In this episode, we'll be discussing the latest signings for Fulham, along with the latest transfer speculation. We have much to get through, but before we get started, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. Bring him on. I believe this is Mr. Gregg. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Doing well. Just had a last-second panic there where my Skype wasn't working, but all resolved.
Well, you got in there, my friend, and listen, I look forward to doing the show with you. I've been looking forward to this for a few days because we actually did a show with Brendan Cronin in Ireland talking about Fulham's time in Ireland, but now we get to talk about signings. We get to talk about transfer speculation. Mike, I also have something interesting. If we do have some time, I certainly would like to take a look at your depth of squad tweet, you know, very interesting that you put out. So if we do have some time at the end, maybe we can talk about that as well.
Sure, yeah, no problems with that.
Okay, very good. And let's just say we might be joined by another co-host or two. I'm not sure. But right now it'll just be the two of us. But let's get going. Let's start a week ago from today. That was Fulham's signing of Sone Aluko. Just to tell you a little bit about him, I'm sure you're very familiar with him. Obviously, he comes from Hull. He's 27 years old. I'm looking at some stuff about him on whoscored.com, just some characteristics, strengths, passing strong, through ball strong, dribbling strong, weaknesses, aerial duels, finishing, his style of play, likes to shoot from distance, gets fouled often, likes to dribble, likes to tackle. Okay, Mike, what are your thoughts about the free transfer of Sone Aluko to Fulham?
Well, he's the kind of player that we've been hoping for, someone who's got pace, who's wide, you know, can play wide, also through the middle. He hasn't probably scored enough goals to, you know, justify being called an out-and-out striker. And I know he's had a couple of injuries, but you know, as a free transfer, as someone who's been in the Championship and at a club that's got promoted as well, so he's going to know what's required. And I'm okay with this. And of course, he scored against us as well. So, mind you, everyone scored against us last year. So that's not exactly a big thing, is it? But I'm quite pleased with it. You know, the question mark is injuries that he's had. Is he fully over them? And just his finishing ability. But I'm more pleased with the fact that it seems everyone we're signing has got some pace, and we saw from the game the other day how quick we moved the ball about and broke. And I can only hope that that's what he's going to bring to the team, and we're going to see a change in style, possibly formation, or certainly different formations at times. But the main thing for me is experience in the Championship, and he's a London lad as well, so settling here won't be an issue. So, yeah, looking forward to, see how he does.
Okay, very good, Mike. And when we go through some of these signs, and this will include a signing we've already talked about, Floyd Ayite, except for Collis, which we'll be talking about in a little bit, the age of these players that they brought in are somewhere between 27 to, I believe, 28 or 29. I think this is actually a good thing, Mike, because you kind of know what you're going to get with a player like Sone Aluko. Would you agree with that, getting a player that's a little older?
Yeah, I mean, we did a bit of this last year with the signings that we had, but there were still gaps in the squad, and it's given all the players who have left us this summer or even over the last 2 years, that sort of age group, that 27, 28 experience is missing in some key areas, and we're still a very young squad. I mean, we've still only got a couple of players at 30 and above, really. So I wouldn't be surprised to see someone of that kind of age range still to come in. We've got a lot of, despite losing Dembele and Hybman and releasing a couple of the other youngsters, we've still got some very young players in the squad, Christensen, Tunnicliffe's, he's still a relatively young lad. And, you've got Williams as well, potentially Woodrow. So these are the right age, experience, seen it all, hopefully. And used to, I hate to say it as well, they're used to moving around from club to club. All these players, they've all been elsewhere. So settling down at a new club, it's not a big thing for them. So in that kind of experience, it should be easy to settle in with the team. And it's interesting, on all the interviews, they keep asking, do you know any of the players, or have you spoken to any of them? So as soon as we can get them in, settle them in, get them in the team, it will be the best way for us to go forward. But I still expect a couple of older ones to come in, and maybe a couple of promising younger ones, to give competition as well. But I think we've seen over the last couple of years, as much as we want to put faith in youth, and I'm always advocating that, for us to get promotion, it's experience and pace that we seem to be going for this year.
Absolutely, and those are two things that I think are desperately needed, and that's what you're going to get here with Sone Aluko. We'll see exactly what kind of impact he has, but again, the right age. And Mike, I'm glad that you brought this up as well, because I was thinking about this. He is from London originally, so I think that's something that I don't think gets talked about enough. You mentioned, when we were talking about Ben Pringle, the fact that someone coming from up north and coming to London, that could be a factor. Well, this could actually be a good factor as well, Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was born in Hounslow, so I don't know if his family's still here or not, but it is important. They need to hit the ground running. We can't let these players have too long to bed in, and so the easier that they settle in, the better they can just concentrate on playing the football and not worry about anything else. I think say about, this is our third show, in 3 weeks, and we were worried about things a few weeks ago. Easier last week. and I know we're going to talk about the other two signings as well, but
sure.
The target was one a week, wasn't it? But they've exceeded that over the last 7 or 8 days. So, things are looking promising at the moment.
They are. And listen, there's a good amount of transfer speculation that leads me to think that maybe we're going to have a few more, hopefully, have a few more signings coming up before that Newcastle match. Because I think, how many was your target before the Newcastle match? Was it five, Mike?
It was five or six, and we've hit that already. If we've hit five. If you count Medel, and all the new guys in over the last few weeks, I think the consensus, wasn't it, Russ? That, if you look on the forums and speak to other fans, that the squad we had, we've let so many go for the Newcastle game. We needed half a new team, really. So you needed five, six players for starters, and that's what these players have all come in there. They are potentially all starters, and that's important. So, one more, and I'll be happier. One more quality player, central midfielder, preferably.
I'm there with you.
But and then a couple of squad players to help, with a width, and maybe a centre back again. And
maybe
of course,
a goalkeeper.
Which we will talk about later, of course.
Yes, absolutely, Mike. All right, let's now talk about the next time. We already talked about him on the show with Brendan, but we're going to talk about him in a little bit different way right now, and that's talking about Thomas Collis. Tomas Collis, probably that's the proper pronunciation. And I'm going to read excerpts from this article from GazetteLive.com, and these are from four writers that cover Middlesbrough, to give us a little idea of how they're feeling about Collis not going back to Middlesbrough, but coming to Fulham. So I'm just going to read a little bit, and then, Mike, I'll get your thoughts on that. So the title of the article was, Should Barrow Have Signed Tomas Collis on a Permanent Deal? Our writers have their say. I'm going to start with Dominic Shaw. Collis? Fulham? Really? Nah. My initial reaction to discovering the defender had signed for Fulham was surprise. That's still the case now. Fulham are the winners here. As would most, if not all, championship clubs have been if they'd signed Collis this summer. Now, this isn't a case of hailing the defender as a world-beating messiah, but we've seen more than enough from Collis in the last couple of seasons to know how he's good at that level. When he's on song and playing regularly, he's very good at that level. Perhaps that's what tempted him to form no upheaval and the prospect of football week in and week out. He goes on to say, and if we're honest, He probably wouldn't have had that at Burrow. He wasn't a regular last year, and Burrow are going to be even stronger next season. He'd have been a useful addition, comfortable at center half and right back, knows what the manager requires, and knows how things work at the club now. But as impressive as Cowles can be, Burrow are looking to strengthen this summer, and Ator Karanka will understandably initially look beyond a player who often found it difficult to get a game here last season. It would have been a sensible signing, safe for both player and club. But Burrow want to move on a level now, and Cowles will want to secure a short-term future. He needs to be playing to make the most of his bags of potential. Still think this move is a bit premature on his part, though. Fulham ought to be delighted. Now, before I move on and read another excerpt from this article, Mike, what are your thoughts about what Dominic Shaw just shared? Well, I shared what he said.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think we've all seen some Burrow fans, certainly on Twitter, and their reaction, and that sort of backs all that up. He wasn't quite a, you know, regular week in, week out last season, but he still played 20-odd games and, you know, played right back, centre back. And, you know, what they're saying there is, you know, maybe he's not quite good enough for Premier League, but certainly Championship, he'll do a good job for us. And he's almost like our James husband. So there you are. We all like husband. We wouldn't have minded him back. Okay, he's got an injury, so that's unlikely to happen now. But
right.
And with the other signing, of course. And, you know, so a player who's been on loan and they've liked. And it's always a good sign when, you know, pretty much to a man, all the Borough fans disappointed that he's not going back there. So I think we've done well with the signing, as we mentioned the other night when it broke during the show. And having looked a bit more into it all, it almost, you know, my initial reaction is going to be the centre-back, but you could argue he's almost going to be the right-back as well. But I suppose, you know, it's competition in that position and centre-back for him. And I'm sure Chelsea have been assured that, you know, he's going to be a first-team player, you know, because that's what they like to do. They like to send him out and make sure they're going to play. So yeah, I think it's, one of, if not the most exciting signing we've made so far.
I totally agree,
potential.
Mike. Yes, he has a lot of potential, and what I'm going to read will back that up as well, because these other writers, you know, all four of them are pretty high on this move for him going to Fulham. And I just read what Dominic Shaw, I'm not going to read what Jonathan Taylor, another writer, had to say. Quote, "I'll be honest, I was disappointed when Thomas Cowles signed on loan for Fulham. After his fruitful 18-month spell at Burrow, I was surprised he had agreed to drop down to the bottom half of the Championship. The Cottagers are building, yes, and may well launch a promotion bid next season. But from what I've seen, Cowles is no longer a youngster at 23, should be knocking on the Premier League door." Now, before I go on to the next runner, Mike, what I find interesting is that, and there's a theme here, that most of these writers are talking about, that he's Premier League ready now. So that, again, is a good sign for us.
Well, yeah, but obviously, you know, for his development, Chelsea have decided that's where he's come. That's where he should be playing, because they want the game. So if he's ready, that's great, because, you know, the important thing is to have the players of good enough quality who are going to. I'm not worried about the Premier League, what we do there, if we ever get there again. It's what we can do in the Championship. So if they reckon he's,
exactly,
you know, above Championship, then, he's going to be good for us, hopefully. So, going back to what we were saying about being excited about a defender, that I think that says a lot about, you know, what we've watched over the last few years. An actual ball-playing, pacey defender is what we're getting excited about. But that's what we need if we're going to push on this year.
Right, and listen, I've seen videos of Cowles, and I've actually spoken to, and David, please don't get mad, I've spoken to a Chelsea supporter that I know, and just told me that this is obviously a very good deal for us, and actually, it's not a bad thing for Chelsea as well, and that he's well thought of, and he brought up to me the match, Mike, and I had to go back to it, the match against Liverpool that he played in, and according to my friend, he thought that he really did a nice job on on Luis Suarez, of all people. I don't know if you remember that match in the year that Liverpool were contending, but he was actually very good in that match.
I don't recall it, but but yeah, I mean, you know, if that's his abilities, then you know, hopefully the rest of the defense can, you know, work as a unit with him to improve. I still think we're going to go looking for another defender, but we have to wait and see for that.
Okay, very good. It looks like someone else has joined us. I'm going to bring them on. I'm not sure who this is. Would this be Giannis or David? Okay, I'm still not sure.
That's David, obviously.
Yes, that's what I thought, David. How you doing?
You gave me the opportunity to impersonate Giannis badly. So, yeah, hi. I thought I'd come and gate crash the party like Mike usually does for a change.
Okay. Well, David, thank you for joining us. Giannis wanted to join us as well. Obviously, he wasn't able to join us, which is fine, but I'm glad that you were. We're just in the middle of talking about the signing of Tomas Kalas. And, yes, David, I have used the C word a few times. I apologize to you, but, you know, I did say the C word, and I know you don't like that. But I want to get your thoughts on the signing. I've been reading some commentary from some of the writers who cover Middlesbrough, and it's been quite positive on Kalas. So what are your thoughts overall of the signing?
Well, I thought Mike made an interesting point just a moment ago when I was waiting to come on. He said about doing a job on Luis Suarez. I would have thought there would be quite a lot of professional footballers who would love to do a job on Luis Suarez.
Actually. Oh,
He's one of those people that...
I said that, by the way,
But not in a nasty way, but he's one of those players that you would want to raise your game to. I mean, when you play against someone difficult, I think you raise your game. Again, Diego Costa, I'm sure there's a lot of people who want to do a job on him. But, you know, this is a guy that really came under the radar. There's been a lot of speculation about other names have been mentioned, but this one wasn't one that I saw at all, so quite a shock. And the strange thing was that even after he'd signed for us, there were still some of these wonderful Twitter accounts saying that Middlesbrough want him back. He's going to sign for Middlesbrough again.
Okay.
So they were kind of really well in the loop. So, yeah, it's a real shock one for me. And I noticed the interesting fact was that not only is he's perceived to be obviously a central defender, he does actually play fullback as well, or he has played fullback. So it kind of interesting permutations because, yeah, with our other signing, you know, although he's apparently right-footed, he plays more at left back. And then, of course, who is going to be our back four or back five if we get down that route, and who's going to play in what position? Certainly, left back is the most pressing one, I think, because we don't have a senior left back in the club really. So we think that one's covered. So has he been signed to be a right back or a centre back? Or both. That's kind of, you know, where we're going with that. And I suppose until we see them in a serious kind of friendly, we're not going to know what Sklar's idea is.
Okay, very good there. Very interesting take. Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts. Where do you see his role? You had mentioned that it could be one of the two. If you had to choose center back or right back, where would you like him to be? I got to drop off for just a couple minutes. I'll be back, guys. So over to you, Mike.
Well, actually, I mean, it's potentially three positions, isn't it? So he could play right back, he could play centre back, but if you play three centre backs, he can play as the right sided one as well, you know, because he's clearly that versatile, and he's pacey, so it sounds like he's, you know, good job as a, I'm not sure as a wing back, but maybe certainly overlapping right back. You know, it just gives us flexibility. But I think he's been signed as a centre back to go with Medel, really. And you know, I still think another defender is going to come in at some stage anyway.
No, I mean, I've obviously been out of the loop a bit, Mike. Really, I've been very busy in the last week, so I haven't had a good chance to study all these new players. But it's interesting to see. You know, who the first choices will be, what positions they're in, and what formation. The fact that we've signed maybe two potentially wide strikers or wide midfielders kind of suggests that he's not looking at the wing back system as his first choice. But who knows, Mike?
Well, this is it. Last year we saw him use pretty much, three formations at times, and stuck mainly with 4-4-2. But I think 4-3-3 with those two wide guys, he's a wide attacker, seems to be the route he goes down. But we're going to talk about that possibly later with McCormack, and where does he fit in? Because is that a formation that suits him? And I'm not convinced it does. But I think the main thing is we need competition in all positions. Frederick's a right back. There's Richards if he's still going to be around. There's Grimmer, there's Callis now. So, we're just going to have to see. I mean, if it's not going to be a wing back, then certainly from reading what the Borough fans were saying, he can play in a back four on the right as a right back and get forward well. So, it's just versatility for him. We'll have to see how it plays out and who he fits in. I mean, Madel's a right-footed centre-back as well. So do you want two right-footed centre-backs? It's that kind of old argument again as well. But Stearman seems to have done himself no harm during the three games that he's been involved in. Tuesday will be interesting when they play Aldershot to see what the lineup is there.
Okay, very good, guys. Very good, and thank you for filling in while I just had to drop off for just a few minutes. I really appreciate that, and good commentary. Talk about the different formations we could possibly be playing, and I look forward to talking about McCormack at the end of the show because that's something I really want. Both of you, I want your opinions on where he fits because I'm curious based on some of the players that we brought in. I'll just share this real quick, guys, and we'll move on. Just a little bit more commentary and on Gazette Live. There are four rides. I'm just going to read one more. It's Philip Talentire. He said, while Tomas Kalas would have been a useful and versatile squad man, I'm not surprised Burrow haven't signed him. The Czech defender was a steady performer last season without setting the world on fire. Had he re-signed for a third spell on Teesside, the likelihood is he would have rarely featured in the starting lineup next season, and that wouldn't help his development or his chances of international football with the Czech national side. Kalas could one day be a decent top flight defender, but he's not at that stage yet. And a full season in the championship with Fulham is a better move for the 23-year-old. So he's actually back in the move to Fulham. Okay. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's now talk about a signing that actually happened yesterday. The signing of, and I don't know if I'm saying this guy's name right, Dennis Odoi. I'm assuming that's isn't it the way you say it, but I could be wrong there. So I'm going to read an excerpt from this article, then want to get your thoughts on the signing. The article, again, this was a translation to English, so some might have been lost in the translation here. It's an article by Timothy Collard on Volbankrant.com. It's entitled, A Missed Opportunity for the Belgian Clubs, A Great Loss for Sporting Walkeren. And this is actually from the 10th. So it's dated a few days, and you'll understand what I mean, because at this time he had not signed with Fulham. I'm just going to read an excerpt from his article. Soon, the Jupiter Pro League looks back. One of his Belgian tastemakers relocated abroad. Dennis Odoi is about to get married with the English Fulham. A missed opportunity for the Belgian clubs and a great loss for Sporting Walkeren. There is no doubt about it. Odoi was one of the best wingers in our National League. The 28-year-old flourished after a somewhat disappointing period at Anderlecht. Odoi's been three seasons on and one of the absolute stalwarts at Walkeren. The defender played consecutively 37, 37, and 35 league games for the Tricolors. Barely injured. Probably suspended. In short, a man you can count on. And then it goes on and talks about he can play left back, he can play right back, because that's something that has been talked about. But I'm paraphrasing. But he did play last season and I believe a couple seasons at left back. So just keep that in mind. Now just read the end of it because it goes to talking about the different positions he could play at fullback. That makes Odoi an interesting player. Odoi, however, prefers a foreign adventure. That is his perfect right. Instead of pulling a Belgian club, already it is clear that this is a missed opportunity for Gent and some other top clubs from the JPL. And then there's just the title Bad Luck for Lokeren. Okay, so that just gives you a little bit of what a writer in Belgium is saying about the move of Adoy. At the time, he had not moved, but it looked like it was going to happen. All right, Michael. I want to get your thoughts on the move and also what I shared from this writer in Belgium about Dennis Adoy.
Okay, well, this is a difficult one because I don't ever recall seeing this player play, so we can only go by, you know, what we've read and what we've seen, you know, online, or I can anyway. I must say, I thought his interview on the website was really good.
Excellent.
He came across as a bit of a character, and
yep.
You know, English very good, and I suspect he potentially, you know, John Pansel type character who's going to get on well with the fans if he does well. It was interesting you said on that article. I hadn't read that article, and it said he's never injured. And that's what stood out. I looked at his appearances, and he plays a lot of games. And touch wood, as I look around for wood in the living room here. touch wood, he's going to be fine for the coming season. But I have no problem with a right-footed player playing at left-back. There's been plenty who've done that over the years. And I will say from my own playing that as a right-footed player, I actually do prefer playing on the left. So, you know. So I'm in his camp there.
okay.
But again, very pacey, and which is, I'll say it again, it's the running theme for all the signings we're making. And, no more the old walking football that we've been watching the last couple of years. And as I asked Brendan the other night, you know, with the younger players in the squad and these pacier players, you know, what was it like when Parker was on the pitch? You know, because for me, he's the one who does slow down the game that bit too much. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all fits together. But I'm pleased with the signing. All seems fairly positive. But of course, the proof will be, you know, once we see him playing. But I think he could be. Yeah, he could be quite fun this season. Like I say, potential sort of fans' favourite.
I hear you, Mike. And before I go to David, because I want David's thoughts on the signing as well, one thing that I found interesting, and we ran into this with Floyd Ayite, who had an endorsement from a former Fulham player on loan. You know, he had that endorsement. Well, now we have another endorsement. This from the original Moussa Dembélé. You know, said if you watch the video, he said very nice things to him about Fulham, that it's a family club. So again, we have another ex-player giving Fulham an endorsement. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's the same as before. It's nice to know that.
Seiko Fofana was the other player.
Yeah, it's nice to know that players who have gone away still hold us, in good light, and are willing to recommend us as a club and a fan base for their friends to go to. So, yeah, that's good. I look forward to Jazz Richards doing that to players when he goes to another club.
Okay. Very good. That's very funny there, Mike. All right, David, over to you. And yes, I know that it's difficult, like Mike said. We've not seen this player play. That's why I wanted to share that information. But based on what I've read and what I've heard about him, the way he described himself, he does have pace. And, David, this is the one thing that you would complain about over and over again. So I'm going to ask this a little bit different to you. You have not seen this player, but if he is durable like he has been and does have pace, would that be a good sign for you with this particular player?
Well, you know, we like Ryan Fredericks because he's got pace. And,
right.
You know, he's a okay defender, but not more than that, I guess. So if it's like an upgrade on Frederick, someone who can play that role and is a 90-minute man and doesn't get injured and has got the pace, then, you know, it's a win-win situation, obviously. You know, we'd love Ryan Fredericks to get better, but if this guy is kind of a ready-made replacement for that, albeit on the other side, I mean, we may see both of them. But, of course,
Right. Durability
is what we need. Players who are fit. Yeah, and it'll be interesting because, you know, I think the levels of fitness, you know, needed in the UK are probably higher than in other countries. You know, one of the things you were talking about was the ability to stay in Belgium. no disrespect
right.
to them and other things. I wouldn't say Belgium was one of the sort of, you know, higher-ranked leagues in Europe. If you was to pick, you know, you're going to look at Britain, you're going to look at, obviously, Spain, Italy, Germany, before you look at anywhere like Belgium, and I'd have thought others as well. So for him, I'm sure it is kind of an upgrade in a way that the challenger coming to play in maybe one of the toughest countries, is more of a challenge than staying in his own country. And yet, you know, the rigours of football in here, you know, it's a hard place to play, perhaps. It's not, you know, always warm and sunny. You know, you get some horrible cold nights and horrible pitches. Less so these days, thankfully. Most of the pitches are pretty good all year round. But, you know, we'll see how his durability lasts. Is he as durable as he thinks he is? Is he as durable as my washing machine that died after 2 years? Hopefully, hopefully better than that, because that was pretty poor. That made others look durable. But, of course, pace is what we need. And then, as Mike said, this has been the running theme. Everyone that we've bought so far, really, or the three new people who've come in, not counting Maddle, because he was obviously, you know, it's not like a signing, Maddle. I know we've signed him permanently, but we were used to him, and we've already seen that as a defender, he has got probably more pace than a lot of them. But in terms of that, the other three who've come in also all classed to be pacey players as well. So great. And you know, I think Mike has to be careful with his attacks on Jazz Richards, because he's making me look like a Jazz Richards fan by comparison. He'll have briefcase Ben writing in again to complain if he's not careful. So I'm not sure. I don't know. Yeah, no, you have to field these emails, don't you, Russ? We don't have to deal with it. We can criticise Kit and briefcase Ben. We didn't ever criticise briefcase Ben. Sorry, we criticised Jazz Richards and Kit all the time.
Sure.
And Ben writes into you. We can do that. Who else can we criticise, Mike? Get Ben tapping away his keyboard there. But,
okay, David.
I don't think Jazz Richards will be giving a good reference to anyone that wants to come to Fulham. But, you know, them's are the breaks. You know, we've got to move on from that. And, you know, this guy on paper sounds like he's going to be an improvement and something that we need.
On paper, yes, David, 100%. But like Mike has said, and you've said too, until you see them, and I think both of you are wonderful judges of talent, and you know pretty much right away if they're going to fit or not. You got to give them some time, but I think you always, the two of you, get a good feel right off the bat. So I think we're going to learn something very early on with both of these players. I'll give them a chance one way or another, and I think you guys will too. But I think you guys will get a good sense pretty early on. So I look forward to your analysis of all these players. And then, you know, obviously what's great about it is we could talk about it on Cottage Talk. All right, guys, let's move on. Everyone wants to talk about transfer speculation, and there's a good amount of it. David, I'm going to start with you. There's been a good amount of transfer speculation lately linking Fernando Amorebieta to a team in Spain, but recently there was also speculation linking him to Newcastle. I saw this on a couple of Newcastle blogs. What are your thoughts about Fernando Amorebieta? Would you be against him moving? Would this be a blow for Fulham, or do you think this would be a good thing for Fulham? Again, this is just speculation, and there have been reports that he wants to leave. So what are your thoughts about everything going on with Fernando Amorebieta?
Well, I think if a player is set on leaving, and we've said it before, you probably want to let them go. You don't want someone playing for you that doesn't want to be there. I know that obviously Jukanovic was a fan of his, because he's, you know, he brought him back early, and he figured pretty much as a regular once he came back. And, you know, in what was a poor defence, he probably was one of the better players, to be honest with you, or consistent players anyway. So, you know, a shame, but he has his faults and he has his limitations. I think he must be 30 now, if not older. So he's not got, you know, lots of years left in him. But he has got lots of fouls and penalties left in him, potentially, and red cards. So I don't think it's a big blow if we're looking to bring other people in, people who are an upgrade. I'm hoping he goes to the Spanish team, just because it's fun saying their name, isn't it, Russ, if you know how to pronounce it.
Would you like to give the honours of pronouncing that, David?
I think it's Sporting Gijón.
Okay. Gijón. I'm not sure about it. I'm not touching that one, but... But good job there, David.
Gijón.
Okay. Okay, very good, very good. Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts about the whole situation with Fernando Morbieta. If I can remember correctly, the Spanish team didn't have much money to spend. Newcastle probably does. So what are your thoughts about this? As David said, we've talked about it. It doesn't sound like he wants to be here. So obviously the best thing is probably to move on from him. But there's got to be a decent price. So I'm going to ask you, thoughts on him, but also what type of price do you think Fulham should get for Fernando Morbieta? He's 31 years old. Keep that in mind.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, as we come on air, Paul Wolverton has posted a bit on Get West London saying that he's got a choice to go to Newcastle, but he wouldn't be a first choice, you know, centre back. He'd be the backup up there, and that we want to get rid of him because it's £17,000 a week on his wage bill, which is less than I thought he would be on, if that's true. And you know, Paul is posting a lot more about Fulham recently, and I think he's being fed quite a lot of info. And it says that we're looking for a minor fee. So when you're talking minor fee, what a few hundred thousand pounds just to sort of, you know, maybe cover this year's wages or whatever, or, you know, a few months' wages of his. But it's a difficult one. I mean, you know, didn't rate him at all, couldn't wait for him to leave. And then he came back last year and he had a few good games. And then he would revert to type and act like the street thug that he is. And not know how to tackle and just, you know, get a red card for silly handballs and things like that. So the question is, you look at him, is he a player who's going to be your first choice, one of your first choice centre-backs in a team challenging for top eight, top six, which is what we've got to aim for, whatever anyone thinks. And I have to say he's too much of a liability. So as good as he can be, if we can offload him, and, you know, preferably to Spain, but, you know, they're just trying to pick him up for nothing. Then we do that and we reallocate those funds to another player because he is the archetypal accident waiting to happen and for all his attributes. So time to move on. And I think, again, if you're a player and you don't really want to be here, you know, then go. Go. You know,
yeah.
I've had enough of all these players who don't want to be here. Just go. We want a team spirit all going in one direction, and I don't need some misery in the corner, you know, on his phone to his agent all the time saying, oh, I want to leave, you know, and that could be aimed at another player we might talk about later, but, you know, just go.
Okay, and I'm there with you, and David, I want to get your thoughts on this because Mike brought up a good point. If you know, and I know you don't think that we can contend. You've said this before. That there's too much to be done to contend for top six. But you have to try. And if you have those ambitions, is he too much of a liability? I agree with Mike. I think he's too much of a liability, too much of a risk. If you have those type of ambitions, what are your thoughts on that?
No, it's right. I mean, he is always, you know, for all his what he does do well and. You know, he came back in, he offered a lot of strength and robustness to a defence that was lacking that. But he also offered that, you know, that ability to give away free kicks and accumulate cards. And you can't afford, to, you know, in a team that needs consistency to have people like suspended, perhaps, you know, or you know, giving goals away or giving opportunities away like that. So I agree. I mean, it cost us nothing. I'm sure his wages were pretty high, but he cost us nothing, remember, when he came in from, I think, was it Valencia on a free? And so I think anything we get for him would be a bonus, considering certainly his age and everything else. You know, and you're right. I mean, if we want to contend, you know, what is, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. We've got to start somewhere. So we have to start moving forward, you know, and consistently moving forward. And we haven't really done that. We, you know, we've kind of hit the bottom and levelled out, hopefully, and it's not going to get worse than that. It wasn't looking so good a couple of weeks ago, but there has at most start been some movement, you know, in the right areas. Okay, we've seen sort of two kind of defensive players signed, a couple of attacking players. I think we do obviously need to see a lot more than that. Whether we're going to contend, who knows? If we get off to a flyer and we get the right people in, potentially, but I think it's going to be hard. As you saw yesterday, I had a kind of mini bet with someone on Twitter that who reckoned we're going to finish second behind Newcastle. And I said, in Gary Lineker style, I would do the show in my underpants if we did. well, which is when you're kind of on. Well, yeah, it's not quite the same effect when you're on radio, really, is it, or whatever, on a podcast. It doesn't really have the same benefits.
Oh, but, boy.
Nevertheless, I'm fairly confident that we won't finish second, unfortunately. I hope that, you know, we can end the season saying you were wrong. You predicted we wouldn't. But
I would love that.
I'd like to see. Yeah, no, but we need to, obviously, we need to get more people in. The people we've got in so far are maybe that first step in the right direction, but it's certainly not the complete picture. We need more new bodies through the door. We need to shift more deadwood. And then let's see how we start against Newcastle in 3 weeks today. That's all it is. And then we can perhaps start making more radical predictions about, you know, where we are going to finish.
Yeah, but David, like you said, it's a good first step. The moves that they've made so far on paper have been good, but there's still much more work to be done. And I can say that, and I'm glad that you said that as well. But let's move on. Let's talk about a very interesting piece of speculation I think both of you are going to have fun with. So I'm going to share this right now. Mike, to you, what do you make of the speculation of a potential swap of fullbacks as reportedly Cardiff City left-back Scott Malone could be coming to Fulham and Jazz Richards could be going the other way to Cardiff City as part of this potential deal? Mike, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I mean, Scott Malone... It's Scott Malone, isn't it? The other player. I mean, you look at the Cardiff fans, and they're worse than me on their player. You know, it's almost like we could we're pushing them both out the door, and we're going to meet on the M4 somewhere and swap these guys over and say, you know, you have this rubbish player, and we have this rubbish player back. I mean, I wonder actually if the swap is going to go ahead now because we've got a left back, we've got a player who can play at right back. And centre-back for other players in those positions. I wonder, do we need to get this left-back? But as for moving Jazz on, I'm willing to drive anywhere to move my... I feel sorry for the lad, but he gave one of the worst performances I saw all of last season. There were a lot of bad performances last season. But against Brentford, he was just horrendous and... He doesn't look happy, and it just hasn't worked out. And, you know, he can live on marking Hazard out of a game in the international from 3 years ago for as long as he likes, but he can't even mark, you know, a Rotherham winger out of the game. So, I'm sorry, you know, it's just, it hasn't worked out, and it's time, he moves on. And, you know, if we can get a few quid for him, then fair enough. You know, if we have to pay a taxi fare, we should do that as well.
Well, let me ask you, Mike, and listen, I've been going back and forth with several Cardiff fans because they were, I would say, equal or maybe worse on this player than we are in Jazz Richards, believe it or not. And I was going back and forth with one of these guys, and it was interesting because he said to me, again, I kept seeing this about Jazz. Oh, they like Jazz. They've seen him play for Wales, right? You know, like you just said, they've seen him play for Wales.
Yeah.
But we see him each and every week. You and David obviously see him much closer because you're there. So you see everything that he does. And I said to this one supporter, I said, you will hold your breath every time someone goes at him in the box. You will hold your breath. And then he comes back to me and says, you will do the same with Scott Malone. You will do the exact same. So I find this interesting, Mike, that this could be swapping, like you said, one team's rubbish for another, but could it be possible that he could be coming in? I know he started the majority of the matches, but could the idea be that he's a squad player and that they're getting him to come in to be a squad player?
Yeah, I mean, he could be coming in just as that. We're going to talk about the depth thing I did earlier on, but,
yes.
You know, I think we're okay in that position. And, he's obviously not going to cost a lot of money and wages, but, you know, we still have a budget and I'd rather use it elsewhere. I think we'll be okay left back wise. I don't think we need to swap one player for the other. But you know, if he comes in, we'll see how it goes. You know, I mean, we've had good players who are apparently good at other teams, and they come to us and rubbish. And it happens for us as well. You know, players who are stars for us, they go elsewhere, and it doesn't work out for them. So we'll just see. But the thing about Jazz Richards, it's just not just me and Dave. It's at games you can tell fans have just had enough of him. And yes, I had a bit of a ding dong on Twitter the other day when I was slagging him off. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But you know, there was only one person who was saying he was any good. And, you know, he was trying to say that he was better than Fredericks. And it was just like, you know, but everyone else was, yeah, can I get rid of him? Can I drive him? just take him? You know, it's all this kind of stuff. So the fans have had enough about him as well. And, you know, it's just time to move on for both parties.
Yeah. And that's the way that I'm looking at this, Mike. If you know, Scott Malone, if this deal does come off, and again, right now it's just speculation, if it does, come in, let's see what you can do. But I don't see them bringing him in to be a starter. I see them bringing him in to be a squad player. And if that's the case, then let's see what you have with him. And if he doesn't work out, then he's just a squad player. You know, and then Jazz Richards goes the other way. Because, like you said, at this point, it might be the best thing for him to move on. David, I want to get your thoughts on all this. Again, I find this fascinating that both groups of supporters want each of their players to go to the other team, and each are thinking that the other team's getting the worst of the deal, which I find fascinating. What are your thoughts about all this speculation?
Well, I had to laugh there when Mike brought that up, because I saw that the other day on Twitter, and Mike was getting abuse from someone about how Jazz Richards wasn't that bad and Fredericks was worse, and our friend Ben chimed in and said that Grimmer was worse as well, and just to wind Mike up, I think. I could say Ben's probably got his keyboard out now. He's got hard out. It's just as well this other guy isn't, for the amount of abuse Richards has got. But unfortunately, you know, he has been terrible for Fulham. There's no two ways about it. It's a shame, and I hope the abuse has been about him personally. I'm sure he's a lovely guy and everything, and I'm sorry if any of it's ever, you know, he's been hurt by it, but his performance at Fulham have been rubbish. I don't think he's ever done anything better than average. You know, at his very best, he's been average, and he's just not been good enough. He's, you know, he doesn't defend well enough. He gets people get behind him. He gives away fouls and penalties. He offers nothing going forward, really. And it's hard to see how on earth he apparently had a good game for Wales, because that was, the exception to the norm. And it's quite funny that, you know, very ironic that I'm sure most clubs do have a player that is their sort of hate subject. I mean, at Fulham, we've had lots, unfortunately, over the last few years for one reason or another. But there's always one at a club that everyone thinks is rubbish. And I guess it's a match made in heaven, isn't it? It's a perfect swap. You know, you swap your rubbish player, we swap ours. I just, you know, whether it does happen, I don't know, because certainly left back, we are short in that position. You know, we have potentially people who can play there, such as Ream or Amabieta if he stays, or Kavanagh, but none of them are an ideal solution. Dennis is potentially our new left back there, unless we sign anyone else, of course, in the meantime. And I think we probably need cover there. I mean, perhaps less so, you know, the performances of, Leon Sessegnon in the friendlies has been very encouraging, and you'd like to think that, you know, if push came to shove and we needed someone in, perhaps he could come in and do a job. But you certainly aren't really relying on such a young player to fill that position.
You got to be careful with Sessegnon, David. And I know Mike feels very strong. You got to be very careful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the argument says if you're good enough to play, it doesn't matter how old you are. But you don't. You know, we've seen in the past with potentially burning out other players, playing them too early, putting too much pressure on them. You know, it's very well, I think, it's, you know, for you and me, we all three of us here, we all play football. I don't know if you do, Russ, but me and Mike play football, and we could both play in excellent teams. If you put me and Mike in a really good team, they'd probably get away with it. You know, we would look like stars as well, or the others would cover for us. But you put someone in a rubbish team, and you know, if everybody has to stand up and be counted, and it's a pressure thing. So say, you know, if we had top of the league and 10 great players, you know, playing as a team, you may be able to do that as a youngster. Less pressure coming like that, you know, as a team that's been doing so badly as we have. I think it'd be very difficult. So you've got to be very sparing, I think, with someone like young Sessegnon, you know, because he is an excellent talent, obviously. The reports from Ireland were excellent about him, and that's great. But we need a first-choice left-back and even potentially a second-choice left-back before we have to rely on him to come in the side. So maybe slightly less pressing than it was. But do we want someone else's rubbish? Well, as Mike said, we've brought in people who are meant to be good and they turned out to be rubbish. So maybe the reverse works. Who knows? You know, it's all a situation again where jigsaws, you know, fit in different situations. And maybe Scott Malone, if he did come, may turn out to be a useful player for us, despite not being very well liked at Cardiff. Who knows? But I think anything that gets Jazz Richards out the door has got to probably be a good move, hasn't it?
Okay. I'm there with you, and I'm sure Mike is there with you as well. And if it happens, so be it. Give him a shot, see what he can do, and then we'll see how, if it does happen, how Jazz Richards would do for Cardiff City. So, but let's move on. Let's not talk about another piece of speculation, a very interesting one that I saw. I think I saw this on Sunday. And, Mike, I'll go right back to you. There were reports, like I mentioned earlier in the week, that Fulham had made a bid for Wolverhampton Wanderers central midfielder Kevin McDonald. They obviously made bids last summer as well. This is speculation, but would you like to see Fulham sign this central midfielder? We do need a central midfielder, Mike, but do you want to see them sign this one?
Well, I do, but he seems very reluctant as well to come to us. So, you know, whether we've actually agreed a fee, you know, their manager plays quite a good game. 1 minute a fee's agreed, next minute they're still talking. So you're not quite sure. But, I mean, he was one of the best. Well, he was the best player at Craven Cottage last year. And he is the kind of player we need. We haven't got that defensive midfielder. Matilla didn't go to Ireland. He was left at Motspur Park to train, as was Bodrov. So there's two players you can expect, you know, not going to be around. So there's a big gaping hole for a defensive midfielder to come in. And, you know, McDonald does fit that bill. And I tweeted to Scott Tanfield the other day, we should just, you know, if a fee's agreed, give him 24 hours, are you going to join us or not? And if not, we move on. Because let's not waste time like we did last summer over him and Dunk. You know, I mean, we've had a good start. We've got five potentially good signings in. Let's not waste 2 weeks on this player. Let's go to the next on the list and get him in. Because as David points out, 3 weeks today, we play Newcastle on TV. And I saw on Sky today, they're already building up to the game with interviews with Benitez. So, you know, Newcastle are going to be, you know, the key for Championship football on Sky this year. And we're in the firing line first game. So, yeah, let's not waste any time. Let's just go out and get a player who can play in that position, who we rate. And if McDonald don't want to come, then move on. Just as we want to move players on who already here who don't want to be at the club. So, I'll just put a cut-off date and just say, do you want to sign? No, then right, we move on.
Then we move on. Okay, very good there, Mike. David, over to you. What are your thoughts about the speculation with Kevin McDonald?
There's a bit of a deja vu scenario, isn't it? Last year, it seemed that he was coming to us maybe, and then it seems perhaps, is he just angling out for a better contract? Is he doing a Ross McCormack special? And nothing came of it. But, you know, as Mike said, he was definitely one of the more impressive players we saw playing against us and for Wolves, and I think he would be a good addition to the squad if it's serious. But, you know, is it serious? Or is this just him? You know, he got a better deal, I think, last year after making noises about transfers, or his agent did, most certainly, because you never know where it comes from directly.
Sure.
So if he's messing around, I'd say, you know, put up or shut up, really. Sign on the dotted line, as Mike says, or go away. But, you know, it would be definitely a good addition to the squad, used correctly, if he's serious or if there's any truth to it.
Okay, very good, David. And going off of that, because Fulham definitely need a central midfielder or two, seriously. So Mike and I talked about this with Brendan. I want to get your thoughts and quickly then get Mike's thoughts because we're talking about a position of need. What do you make of trialist Alejandro Forlan, formerly of QPR, training with us? If he is fit, would you like to see Fulham sign this player?
Well, this chap was very highly rated, and
he was.
Did do an excellent job for the Ha-Ha's when he was in his first spell. I think he suffered a terrible injury, had a long breakout, so I'm not sure how effective he's been since, because they haven't been that effective, thankfully. But, you know, he was very good at what he did initially in that sort of defensive midfield role. Someone who, I mean, you know, we've looked for the kind of the perfect fit, the Dixon Atiru type replacement for years. I don't think he's a Dixon Atiru type replacement. I think he's someone who uses the ball a lot better than that. But he has kind of made that defensive midfield role kind of his speciality and seems to be one of the better players there. He's not ancient either. He's not, you know, he's not young, but he's certainly got a few years left in him, assuming that he is fully behind that. Did he suffer a cruciate ligament injury? Maybe you can remind me, because if he is beyond that, I think it's going to be obviously, you know, I think it's fairly common knowledge he's a trialist at Fulham. This is not speculation about, you know, is he thinking of coming to us? He's a free agent. And so perhaps we have that opportunity to sign him. I don't know if anyone else does. But if we've got first chance to sign him, then let's hope that, you know, the right decision is made and based upon how his performances have been. And more importantly, how well he's fitted in with the other players. You know, what part of the jigsaw he can do, then great. I mean, you know, get him to sign on a dotted line. You can't really complain if you can get a quality player who can do a job for you on a free transfer.
Very good point there, David. You know, again, this is a free transfer. This is a player that very well thought of at QPR, accomplished at QPR. So I'm glad that Fulham are taking a look at him. And, Mike, I want to get your thoughts. We've already talked about this with Brendan, but David brings up a good point. You know, here's someone that could fill a need. You know, a defensive midfielder is not Dixon Atuhu, but it could be almost like found money because he's a free transfer. But here's my question to you. If you're Fulham, how long do you wait before you make a decision on Alejandro Forlan?
Well, to be fair, you know, he's a free agent, so unless he's got people knocking on his door, we can, you know, wait as long as we want. You know, give him a couple more games to see how he does and that type of thing. But we are definitely short in the middle. So, you know, he's a potentially very useful player for us. But let's remember, this is going to be like a, you know, O'Hara out the door and Forlan in. So you get the same issues. They're the same age as when, you know, O'Hara signed for us last year.
That's right. Good point.
You know, are you just getting the same, a bit of a washed up, you know, player? You know, O'Hara, for me, did a lot better than people give him credit for. But, you know, this guy's free, but he does come with some baggage, you know, with the injuries and that type of stuff. But as I did the squad thing this morning, Russ, and, you know, we are desperately short in the middle for experienced players. So, you know, for a player possibly desperate for a team, then we could probably get him signed up fairly cheaply. And, you know, it would be an addition to the squad and another option, that's for sure.
Okay, very good. This is something to follow to see if the club does sign Alejandro Forlan because, like you mentioned, Mike, we need central midfielders. So there's definitely a gap there. All right, let's move on to another piece of speculation. I actually have some interesting information for you guys that I'm going to share in just a second. It's on the speculation linking Fulham to 27-year-old goalkeeper from Brentford, David Button. So I'm going to share a little information first from Jake Murtaugh on Mirror Football. This is earlier today. £2 million for Button. This is what was written. Brentford have put a £2 million price tag on keeper David Button. Fulham are one of several clubs interested in the former Spurs shot stopper, who had 12 months to run on his deal at Griffin Park. The Bees have already knocked back a couple of bids for the 27-year-old, and the Cottagers have been told Brentford want $2 million up front plus add-ons if Button is to make the switch to up the Thames. He has been a virtual ever-present for the championship outfit since his move from Charlton in 2013, clocking up 141 appearances for the West Londoners. However, he has refused to sign the new deal on the table and could move on. To follow up, I actually emailed Jake to get his take on this flyer, and Jake emailed me back. So this is information from Jake Murtaugh directly to me in an email. This is what he emailed me. David Button is one of the best keepers in the championship and would be a snip at £2 million. The reason the price is so low is he has less than a year remaining on his contract and has so far refused to sign the extension on the table. Brentford had signed Dan Bentley from Southend, so are willing to do business at the right price. He's a solid all-round keeper and an excellent shot stopper. His distribution is one area that needs improvement. I don't think he would move to be a number two. It's more like Slavica has two number ones fighting for the shirt. Okay, so that's from Jake Murtaugh. And to follow up, and Mike, you've already said this, Paul Warburton has been busy. He wrote this on Get West London about this situation. According to Paul from Get West London, Fulham reject a £2 million demand for David Button. Okay, so that's all the information on this player. Mike, to you, what are your thoughts about this speculation with David Button from Brentford?
Well, I think you either want to get – I'm getting a bit tongue-tied here. The thing is that we all want Bettinelli to do well, and there's a lot of fans who are – you know, sticking with him, and you know, I want him to do well as well. But we can't go into the season with just him and Jeanmarin as the main two. So we need another goalkeeper, and we need someone challenging. And I'd like a goalkeeper who is the opposite to what we have. All our goalkeepers are very good shot stoppers, you know, but they all tend to stay on their line. I want someone who's going to be commanding, and you know. David Button does do that. I don't see any way we're going to pay $2 million for him. If you know, you could probably find an even better goalkeeper if you're willing to spend $3 million. But I think if we are going to sign him, I think he's coming as a number one. I'm not convinced that Jokanović is a massive fan of Bettinelli after he went from McCarthy in January. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be a good signing. It'd be nice to get one over Brentford. And, you know, he is a good goalkeeper. I do remember his games against us. You know, he's very good at the old time-wasting stuff, bit of gamesmanship. but he is a good shot stopper as well, and would be useful. Would give real competition to Bettinelli. But I just don't see us paying $2 million for a player, you know, in the contract situation he's in, might be $500,000, $1 million. But I think Brentford are having real issues because they're selling players left, right and centre. And, you know, financially they're in trouble. So they might want to just take some money and run and not let the issues we've allowed happen where players get to the end of their contract and walk for free.
Yeah, listen, I hear you, Mike. And while you were doing that, I just went on whoscored.com to see if I could find out any information, what they have on David Button. And they just have his style of play as comes off his line off and his weakness is long passing. They don't have any strengths listed, but that's his style of play. David, over to you. What are your thoughts about this? $2 million is a high price for this goalkeeper, but like Mike was talking about, this tells me that Slavica's looking for someone to compete for the number one goalkeeper. I like Marcus Bettinelli, but I think competition is a good thing. What are your thoughts about this speculation?
I think we're all in agreement that we need a new goalkeeper somewhere along the line, whether it's going to be an experienced backup to Bettinelli or maybe a number one that Bettinelli can learn from. But I have to admit that I haven't really studied Button in any great form. So I can't cast an opinion on whether he's a good goalkeeper or not at this stage. But
sure.
I think £2 million for a good goalkeeper, if that's what he is a price worth paying, because it's a fundamental position in the team. Obviously Mark Schwartz we got for free, and what a fantastic purchase that was. And good goalkeepers are like gold dust. There's lots of average goalkeepers around, but good goalkeepers. He said he's a good shot stopper, but we've had people who are good shot stoppers. Sometimes, if you say a keeper's a good shot stopper, it's a euphemism for that he's crap coming off his line. I'm sure we've all heard that before. So let's hope that it's not, because what we need is a goalkeeper that is good coming out and claiming the ball. Now, so I haven't really watched him, so I don't know. But if they think he's worth a punt, and even at $2 million, then if he turns out to be good, I'd say it was worth it. If he doesn't, obviously it'd be poor. But it sounds like Brentford, do have some issues there. If there's a chance to cash in and get an apparent bargain, you should go for it.
Okay, very good there, David. Very good. All right, let's move on. And Michael, I'm going to go right back to you. We do this each and every week. We talk about speculation with Ross McCormack. It continues now. We have speculation with Norwich. Oh, David, I did it. I almost said Norwich. It's Norwich. They're back in the division. I got, that was
Norwich.
A great moment. I caught myself. I caught myself, though. the speculation is with Norwich City. They could possibly be making a £13 million bid for him. I have to go to you, Mike. What are your thoughts about the latest speculation? It just continues to go on and on with Ross McCormack. We're going to talk about him right after this, about how Fulham want to play with or without him. So before we do that, just talk about the latest speculation.
I'm a bit disappointed you haven't created a jingle for this section of the show now, Russ.
I should.
Yeah, it's the weekly Ross McCormack. Is he staying? Is he going? How much can we get? £13 million. Well, I mean, I don't think there has been a bid because, there doesn't seem to be much being said about it. And, again, you look at what people are saying and it's pretty 50-50. £13 million for a 30-year-old. We're seeing the new players come in. Can McCormack fit into the style that we want to play? Should we cash in, use all that money to improve the squad elsewhere? And then you have the other arguments. Well, where's the striker who's going to get us 20, 25 goals? And we haven't really replaced Dembele with, one of the new guys because it's unlikely they're going to get those kind of goals. So, it's a tricky one. I mean, for me, £13 million, I would take it, absolutely, and then I would look to sign, find one striker, or possibly two for that money, or even three players at £4 million each, something like that. As long as Fulham went to reinvest all the money and they had the targets ready and were convinced they could get them, then I would cash in at that kind of figure. Because I don't think he's going to suit the style that we want to play. And, apparently he had an injury for the last game over in Ireland. But it's odd he has injuries when all this kind of speculation pops up. And from all accounts, he looks unfit again. Just for me, we can't wait. As I said before, we can't wait 6 weeks again for him to get himself match fit into the season. We need to pick all those points up in those earlier, easier games. And so we're going to need him firing straight away. So I can't wait for him to lose half a stone over the first month. I'm pretty sure someone will make a serious bid soon and we'll have to make a decision. But, it's going to depend on what he wants in a way or what his agent wants because, he has form on this. I had someone on Twitter go, why would he leave one championship club for another? Well, he's gone from Cardiff in the championship to Leeds in the championship to Fulham in the championship. There's nothing stopping him going to another championship.
Sure.
If he's going to earn more money, he will push the deal through.
Yeah, this thing just keeps going on and on, Mike. And they have to wait to see if they get the bid. Then they have a serious decision to make. You know, we've heard that speculation is that there's a release clause of £15 million. But again, if you're talking £13 million, we're not that far off here. So what do you do? So David, over to you. You're in charge of Fulham. I'm going to make you Shad Khan. You're Shad Khan. Would you sell Ross McCormack for £13 million?
If I was Shad Khan, I'd probably say, "Who's Ross McCormack?" But that's a bit
David.
Cool. Bit cruel.
David.
I've seen it. It's not just been Norwich. It's been Sheffield Wednesday. It's been Newcastle. It's been Aston Villa. I think it's been every other team in the Championship have supposedly made an offer for Ross McCormack, and everyone in the Premier League and in La Liga, and you name it. I mean, you know, if you believe what you see, because I just started a standard response, "No, they haven't," on Twitter, copying someone else who says that usually, because I don't really believe any of it, to be honest with you. But, you know, there is a very fine line, I think, where at which point I think you would sell. It's like playing the stock market, I think. It reaches a certain point. You look at his age. You look at what positives and negatives he has and how much money you could get. And as Mike says, you know, if you got in £13 million, which, of course, you could reinvest in, you know, maybe two or three good players at least, it's a very tempting offer. But the counter argument is, you know, he has, at least, if nothing else, has been consistent in his goal scoring and in a poor team as well. So someone who can score goals in a poor team, you'd like to think in a better team would score more goals. And if you've got people, you know, that we've signed who are supposedly pacey, can offer, you know, width, you know, it could be a great season for him. Then again, you know, if you've got people who are doing that, you know, maybe Corley or anyone else would score goals as well in a better team. So you don't know. But I think certainly if the release clause is set at £15 million, then that's your line in the sand, if that is what it is. Because below that, I guess they're not going to sell. And if anyone reaches that figure, then they will be selling. It's as simple as that. I think that is where the benchmark has been made. I don't think, you know, after making that release clause, if that's the case, because it's all speculation, I guess, I don't think they will sell below that, if that's what the line is, because they've made their mark in the sand. So if someone's prepared to pay the money, then I think it's good buy. But certainly, you know, what we won't miss is the fact that for the first month or two of the season, he comes back seemingly overweight and slow. He's a very slow starter, and, you know, that's certainly what we don't need it for. And if we're going to do anything this season, we need a good start, a fast start.
I do agree, David, and very good points by both of you. And before I go back to Mike, real quick on this. If you get the $15 million, if say that is the point, that obviously the release clause, here's the thing that Mike said that I'm exactly with, and I'm sure you will as well. They better be prepared for that, meaning that they should have situations ready to go. They should have players, targets ready to go. They should be prepared for this situation. Would you agree if someone comes in with that bid, they should already be thinking, well, this is what we need to do if someone comes in with a bid? Do you agree with that? David, did David drop off? David probably dropped off.
Sorry, I think I thought you'd gone back to Mike.
No.
This is Fulham for you. I mean, this is like a lot of things. You know, you could extrapolate Fulham for the British government. They say, well, we'll have a vote to decide whether we stay in Europe or not. And then when people decide to vote out of Europe, oh, what do we do next? It's kind of, there's no plan being made. And the same is here. I mean, have they got that eventuality covered? Who knows? But certainly there needs to be a plan in place that how to spend the money and who to go for. But the question is, do they have that plan? And that would be a big surprise. Do they have people lined up to sign if Ross goes? Well, let's hope they have a contingency, but I don't have much
they
faith
should.
In Fulham, I'm afraid.
Okay, but they should. I think we're all in agreement that they should. They should be ready to go. And like Mike said, if you get something like that, you should be able to buy three players, a couple strikers possibly. I agree with Mike there. All right, I'm going to go back to you, Mike, because we've already kind of talked about it. You've already basically said you don't see how he fits. But I definitely want to talk about, Does Ross McCormack fit into how Slavisa Jokanović wants to play? We think that he could potentially play 4-4-2, 4-3-3, 3-5-2. So I'm asking, you've already said you can't see how he fits. So just expound on that. Why do you think he would not fit into how Savisa wants to play?
Well, I mean, I'll just clarify that. Is that if we play 4-3-3,
yeah,
then, or which, you know, technically it can be, you know, it's 4-5-1 if you like, or
right,
you know, whatever way you want to do it that way. If he's the one, if he's the point man, if he's the one at the top, in the middle as a main striker, that's just not him. You know, he drops too deep to get the ball. He's too interested in going all over the place. So it's okay having, you know, Aiti and Aluku bombing down the wings. But, you know, McCormick lacks pace, as we know. And, you know, I can see these two guys racing forward and McCormick's, you know, 20 yards back and not in the box. Or is he, are they looking to play him as the player who gets the ball, then lays it off for these guys to run onto? And then, you know, he's not getting those kind of goals that he's got the last couple of years. So is there a better player who could do that? So it's only when we're playing the one main striker, because I just don't think he can do that job. If he plays 4-4-2, 3-5-2, that kind of thing, then fine. You know, he can probably, you know, stay there and, you know, we'll see how that goes. But really, we all sort of think that it's going to be 4-3-3. And for that, one man up top, I just can't see McCormick doing it. And I do get a feeling that though Jokanović said, oh, I want to build a team around him and that type of stuff, it just doesn't play out like that. It doesn't seem to, you know, you're just going to build a team with all these fast players and have McCormick in the middle somewhere, just laying it all off all the time. So I'm not convinced he's fitting in if he goes down that route. So,
okay.
I just think he wants a bigger, stronger, pacier striker up front with a bit more power. You know, we saw what Troy Deeney did for Watford.
Yeah,
you know, we're
I
not
was just
be
thinking
able to
about
him.
That. Good point. Yep.
Yeah, we're not going to buy him, but obviously, but
a Troy
you know,
Deeney
that
type
though,
of bit,
that's right, and so that's what I think we, you know, he would potentially want. Because, but also, you know, Smith, I don't think he's going to hang around, and Woodrow could possibly do that job. You know, I don't think he's ready to lead the line as a one man striker up, you know, with the others around him. But you know, so there's lots of options. But he only works for me in a two men up top.
Okay, very interesting. And David, over to you, because Savisa could play different styles. We've seen the 3-5-2. Mike had said that he can obviously play to a front with the 4-4-2 as well. But if he does play 4-3-3, which morphs into, say, a 4-5-1, this could be a problem with McCormack. So what are your thoughts about this? If, you know, again, Savisa could play many different styles. So do you see the issues that we could have with McCormack if he plays a 4-3-3?
Yeah, we saw that before. We saw it last season. And one of the kind of red lines that we sort of identified on the show was don't play, you know, Ross McCormack on his own up front. Now, it's whether you categorise a 4-3-3 in the same way as you categorise a 4-5-1, because they are effectively the same formation. Just
right.
Obviously, when you're defending, the two wide men come back, and when you're attacking, they go forward. So it depends how, you know, how closely it's designed, whether either of those wide men, you know, are designated to stay forward at all times, or whether or not they have to both come back and leaving Ross on his own. Certainly, the introduction of pace would help, because, you know, you would imagine that players making runs from deep would offer, you know, Ross more outlets if he's able to hold the ball up. But is he able to hold the ball up on his own? I'm not so sure, really. I don't think it's an ideal situation for him. But, you know, do we know that Slavisa has yet decided on a format? Does he have a format, you know, a formation that he wants to go with, come what may? You know, is he thinking, right, I'm going to plan the season on a 3-5-2, or I'm going to plan the season on a 4-4-2. Whatever. Does he have a plan that he wants to stick to and use as his default program with, you know, other options to come along? Who knows? This is what we don't know. Because certainly, I think in the friendly so far, I think it's been mostly a 4-4-2, hasn't it? I haven't seen, you know, any great sort of detail about the matches or how it's worked, but I thought we'd been playing more of a 4-4-2 type scenario. But again, who would be the person to play alongside Ross? I don't think it would be Aiti, because he's more of a wide player. Maybe Aluku, perhaps. But I don't think we've seen all of the jigsaw yet. We're expecting there to be, you know, twice as many people coming as there are now. So that might make things a bit clearer. But I think certainly Ross can't play on his own where he is a lone man. He needs someone close to him in support. But that depends really on the finer kind of nuances of the formation. Again, sure. If you have a 4-5-1, but you have someone, you know, like the Tom Kearney role playing just off the striker, then it almost ticks the box to one extent. But I don't know. It's I think it's too early to say, to be honest with you.
Okay, very good there, David. And I just want to mention to you that Brendan told us on the phone in Ireland show that they did play 4-3-3. They did play they played 4-4-2 and some 4-3-3. So that's part of the reason why, you know, we're talking about it a little bit because they did show that. So we'll see exactly how this turns out. But I think it's very interesting to see where he fits, if he fits. He fits in certain formations and not in others. So Visa has some decisions to make in regards to Ross McCormack. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's now talk about Mike's tweet. Very interesting. Again, he tweeted out earlier today, a look at the depth of squad for Fulham. To clarify, not saying this should be the team or formation. Mike, you tweeted that out. You have four teams here, and I'll just go through the first team. And you said you want to make this clear. You're saying you're not saying this should be the team, but this is what you have. And, Mike, this was based on a 4-4-2, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's all, whenever I've done these things in the past, you know, you get people reply straight away going, oh, you're playing him at right back, or he's a winger, and, you know, oh, they're playing 3-5-2, you know. So I went for a simple, bog standard, you know, Harry Redknapp 4-4-2 type, you know, good British team. And so I went through the squad, sort of listed them in a kind of order. And as the team goes along, you know, especially the youngsters, I've had to move around a bit. But I think anyone who's seen the tweet and they've seen the 44 players listed, you will see the thing that stands out straight away is midfield. And, I mean, you can go through the two teams. I think I've pretty much got the first two possibly right, or the right players, if not the right lineups.
Right.
But it does show that we are desperately short in midfield and possibly on the wing as well.
No, very good. And I'll just go through that and then I'll get David's thoughts. This is the first team that Mike has. We'll try to see how much we can get through this because we are limited for time here. But Mike has Bettinelli, Fredericks, Odoi, Callis, Maddell, Kearney, Parker, Tunnicliffe, Aiete, Aluko, and McCormack. Okay, so that would be his first starting 11. David, what are your thoughts about that starting 11?
Well, it's pretty arbitrary. I can understand what Mike's done here. He's just picked the 11 kind of supposedly best players for each position, or, you know, the best player for each position out of the people we have available. But I'm pretty sure it's going to change. I think we're all sort of pretty sure it's going to change between now and then. And it shows that the irony that we have four teams of players, you know, in that respect, the way Mike has laid it out. We could field four 11s, but do we have any strength in depth? Not really. In some areas, it's terribly, like, short. So I think it just demonstrates the fact that we could do with getting rid of a lot of people off the wage bill at this stage, and we could bring in certainly more quality, if not quantity. Because I think we don't need to have, obviously, four complete people who could play in teams. I know that this is relying on youngsters as well, but
sure.
I think you'd imagine if three would be enough, wouldn't it? 33 people, including the youngsters, or including the leading youngsters. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to come back on that. No, I mean, you should have. when you include under-21s and a few under-18s, you should have 44 players. I totally think the numbers are right. But it's when you get to, like, a third lineup and you realise, you know, you could... I've got right back, I've got Fredericks, and then I've got Grimm, and then I've got Richards. So you could argue, do you need one of them? You know, you only need two of them, really. So Richards, could, you know, he's in the third team I picked. So you could argue he can go. Bodroff as well, he's in the third team. You know, that's what two players can go. But for me, you know, you've got Matilla and Cole in the second team, and neither of those guys are going to be in. So already you're looking at four or five players there, Dave, who can be shipped out. And then we know, like you just said, we're going to expect others to come in, and it will hopefully make us stronger. And I still expect one or two of the ones in the first two, you know, in the first or second team to sort of disappear. So the numbers are fine, and I don't have a problem with that. But, you want two good players for each position. And what this set out, what this shows is that quality-wise, we're about four or five players short of what we really need.
Right, but, you know, and again, guys, we only have a few minutes, and I'm just going to emphasize what Mike's talking about, because when you look at Tom Kearney, second to him, you had Cole. Again, you're looking at Tonnikoff, second to him, you have Matilla. You know, again, these are situations that are probably fluid, that are going to change. And
yeah,
and if you go in, and if you go into Mike's, yeah. I'm sorry, Mike, do you want to say something?
Yeah, so I was just doing it as 4-4-2. So you have Kearney as a right winger, and then the next player you would probably put in is Christensen, wouldn't you, really, or Williams. But to pick the teams, Christensen had to go in the midfield. But, you know, the second two central midfielders are Christensen and Matilla. So that tells you straight away Matilla's no good, so he has to go. So instead of having 22 players, you're looking at Christensen. He's going to double up as a midfielder and as a wide man at the moment. So our squad, our hardcore players you can rely on, is only about 18. 18, 19, that's just a match day squad. So that's the worry that's come out of this for me.
No, I hear you there, Mike. And listen, we only have a couple minutes left. Please do check out Mike Gregg's, this tweet, very interesting. You definitely have to take a look at the depth of squad. He goes four teams deep. Check that out. But we do have to wrap up the show. Mike, we only have 2 minutes. Any final thoughts before we go? Did I lose Mike? Mike, you still with us?
Yeah,
David,
yeah,
you still with us?
I'm still here, Russ.
Oh, okay.
I'm still here, Russ. I'm still here. Just to say, hopefully next week we will have a couple more players to talk about. I think they're off to Portugal at the end of the week, aren't they? And I'm going to Aldershot to watch the friendly, so I'd be interested to see some of the new players.
Okay, very good. Mr. Holly, thank you for joining us. Any final thoughts before we go? We've got about 80 seconds left.
No, thanks for letting me on. It's good to kind of get back in the saddle, so to speak. Seemed ages since I'd been on, so thanks for letting me share my thoughts with you and Mike. And look forward, obviously, to doing more shows in the future when we have more news, hopefully.
Yep, absolutely, David. And David, I will say this, David. I missed you, David.
Yep.
Oh. I did. I miss you, David. I've been talking to Mike. I miss Mike as well, but I haven't talked to you in a while. So I miss you, David. That'll be my final thought, that I actually miss David Holly. For all of his complaining, I miss David Holly. All right, But, guys, it's time to wrap up the show. For Mike Gregg and David Holly, I'm Russ Golden. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers. See ya.